Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bow tie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spill that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
Welcome to show 100 of the Cup of Joe radio show, the show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Joining us in the celebration today, our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here! And we've got a lot of things in store for you for this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
And, of course, I want to give a special welcome to those of you listening and on the White Rose Society, my good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there, and to all my fans at rantradio.com, listening in on Thursdays and now Mondays. My fans at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York. All of you out there listening in on your iPods. And last but not least, all my fans listening in from across the country and across the world.
Or should I say, around the world, not across the world. This is not a Flat Earth Society show. Oh, man, you do a show for almost 2 years. You'd think I could get that right. Has it been that long? Yeah, it has. This June 4th, it'll be 20 months. And counting, 100 shows in all. Hard to believe how long it's been since I started doing this show. My radio career, if you can call it that, began even further back, way back in July of 2002, when Joey Davis and I got together to do the Joey Jojo show. And that was almost 3 years ago. And we did, what, 33 shows together, Joey and I. I have a lot of people to thank for me being here. And I wanted to get this out of the way first because, you know, it's important, first of all, to let everybody know that, obviously, I don't do this all by myself. I do most of the technical stuff. But really, you know, I couldn't have done it without the support of a lot of different people. And first and foremost, I want to thank my beautiful, wonderful wife for putting up with me doing this all the time. She's waving hello. Hi. There are a lot of women in the world today, certainly American women, who simply wouldn't tolerate having someone put so much time and effort into doing something like this when it brings so little money in. But she's always been there for me and supported me, and I love her all the more for it. And it is important for me, and she says it's important for me to vent every now and then because otherwise I throw things. So I suppose it's a matter of self-preservation there. I also want to thank my former partner, Joey Davis, because he was the one who showed me how to put together the radio show to begin with. He showed me the software, he showed me how to use it, and showed me how to mix everything together. Like I said, we did 33 shows together before we packed it up, and even though we really haven't spoken to each other in a long time, I still think of him from every now and then, and I wonder how he and his wife are doing. His wife's a very nice person, by the way. I want to thank Ben Birch of the White Rose Society. Ben has been hosting my archives at whiterosesociety.org. And you could find every single episode of the Cup of Joe radio show there if you care to go back in time and listen to them. Ben does a remarkable job hosting the archives, not just for my show, but for 15 different radio shows, all the way from little old me all the way up to Randy Rhodes, the queen of Air America Radio. I can't think of anyone who's done more for the cause of liberal radio for so little reward than Ben. And he's And he's still doing a fundraiser right now. So go to his site, whiterosesociety.org, and toss a couple of dollars in the guitar case, as Ben would say. It is high time, however, that the powers that be on the left woke up to that and started realizing that they have something good on their hands with him and started subsidizing him, as they need to subsidize so many more. I want to thank all of my guests and the occasional co-hosts, authors such as Mark Satin, Mark Crispin Miller, and David Bornstein, who were kind enough to share their time and expertise on the show. Rick Laupas, who helped me co-host for a few shows and who has now moved on to bigger and better things. And most recently, Phyllis Euster, who is doing wonderful work at CountPaperBallots.com. I hope to have her on the show more as her busy schedule permits. She's doing some fantastic work in the area of electoral reform, for doing an audit of the Georgia election of 2004. And we just found out, I just found out today that Miami-Dade County has decided to ditch all of their electronic voting machines and go back to paper ballots. They're doing optical scans, which is an improvement over the machines, but not much. Hand count votes, hand counted votes, people. That's what we want. I want to thank Smokehouse and Sumerian for having me on RantRadio.com, where I've been for 72 shows now, and practically the only voice on the left on that station I am. But that's okay. You know, Smoke and Sim are doing some good work there. And go to RantRadio.com and listen into some of the other people there that they have. I want to thank the folks at WNYMedia.net up there in upstate New York for having me on their schedule as well. And posthumous thanks, if that's the right phrase, to some of the networks who carried me in the past and are now defunct, like RadioPower.org. Which died for the same reason a lot of other liberal places died, because people just simply didn't have the funds to keep it going. I want to thank not just Bart Cop himself, but the whole Bart Cop community for inspiring me to do what I'm doing now. Bart's been at this for far longer than I have been, and it was through him that I met people like Fudd and Avedon Carroll and so many others that I hang out with in the Bart Cop chat room. But mostly his anger and his way of expressing himself really inspired me. And he, of course, does his own radio show, which is subscription only, which is fine for him, but I don't want to do that. Who else? Let's see, my fellow bloggers. I want to thank them for continuing to fight the good fight. And even when we yell at each other, and yell at each other we do, I still have some bones to pick with a few members of the blogging community. I want to thank, more personal, I want to thank my friends from the Japanese Animation Club of Orlando, from Anime Week in Atlanta, and Corn Pone Flicks, who venture here from time to time and leave their opinions. My friend Admiral Howard, and even my detractors, such as Ross and my old nemesis Beachon, for contributing. Actually, I got a lot more comments when they were regularly posting, but you know, I let Beachon go because, quite frankly, he didn't really add anything to the discussion. He's just, I don't know, too long to go into. I don't want to get into that. And last but most important, I want to thank all of my listeners, whether you're listening from the blog or from Rant Radio or from WNYMedia.net or from your iPods. You're the reason I'm doing this, because if you weren't there, this wouldn't be a radio show. It would be masturbation. And while I'm not entirely against that, it's not something you want to send out over the airwaves, so to speak. If I didn't mention, did I mention it before? George Lowe, voice of Space Ghost, who always encourages me. I want to thank him and Tim Wiederquist from Japan, who did an article on the show and was also being interviewed. And his wife just had a baby, by the way, so congratulations, you two. An American Stranger from Take Back the Media, which is also another great website. Anyway, that's it for the extended thanks. I didn't want to get too maudlin about it. Let's take a bit of a break. We're going to hear from our friends at Buzzflash, plus a couple of other goodies before we come back. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. As we mentioned a few honorees ago, BuzzFlash just can't keep up with the revelations of Republican sexual perversity. It's kind of brazenly breathtaking to see so many phonies indulge in such public affirmations of puritanism and such private acts of hedonism. Take, for instance, the case of one Dr. W. David Hager, as recently revealed in an article in The Nation. A controversial Bush appointee to an FDA advisory board, Hager is known for his ardent evangelical piety that anchors his staunch opposition to emergency contraception, abortion, and premarital sex, unquote. In fact, as The Nation reports, Hager was instrumental in getting the FDA not to allow over-the-counter sales of emergency contraception pills. A fundamentalist Christian, Hager has painted himself as a victim of secular Americans who are conducting a war against the followers of Christ. But The Nation alleged that the devout Hager had committed adultery when he was married and regularly sodomized his former wife against her will. He would say, she said, "Oh, I didn't mean to have anal sex with you. I can't feel the difference," Hager's former wife recalled incredulously to The Nation, quote, "and I would say, well then, you're in the wrong business," unquote. You see, Dr. Hager is a gynecologist. As for Hager, he responded to the accusations by announcing that he was leaving the FDA advisory committee in June and that his former wife was just bitter. That's nice. Well, wouldn't you be if your husband was a philandering backdoor Johnny who left you checks after sodomizing you? Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
McLaughlin Group, an unrehearsed, hastily assembled program presenting inside opinions and forecasts on major issues of the day. With Jack Germond of the Baltimore Sun, syndicated columnists Pat Buchanan and Eleanor Cliff, and Morton Kondracki of the New Republic. Now here's the moderator, John McLaughlin.
Issue number one, the commander-in-chief in Mexico. Bush wants a free trade agreement. What does President Salinas want, Pat Buchanan?
John, Salinas is playing up his recent economic success and steering his country toward...
Jump on!
I don't think it's so much what Salinas wants. It's what the Americans...
John, this is just another case of President Bush trying to push a policy.
I'm not sure Bush has a policy, which is part of the problem.
Excuse me, Pat, I believe Eleanor has the floor.
Thanks, John. The hard truth is that Bush needs Salinas more than Salinas...
Morton Kondracki!
I think this agreement talk is basically a...
Wrong! There will be a free trade agreement. It will take place within 1 year. Issue number two, Maggie out, Major in. The new British Prime Minister. Some believe he's a Thatcher clone. Will he carry out her policies? Chuck, come on.
Well, Thatcherites are privately rejoicing.
Wrong! More tone.
See, Thatcher endorsed...
Wrong! On a scale of 1 to 14, 1 being lowest degree of likelihood, 14 being absolute metaphysical certitude, what are the chances of Major continuing Thatcher's alliance with Bush vis-a-vis the Iraqis? Eleanor Clift.
I'd say about a 12.
Pat Buchanan!
Hold it. 14 is most likely.
Yes?
I'd have to say about a 9.
Chuck Jamon!
Lower, like 5.
Mortone!
8.
Wrong! The actual degree of likelihood is 6.5. Issue number 3, life after death. Some pundits say it doesn't exist. Theologians disagree. Is there an afterlife? Chuck Jamon!
I really don't know.
Mortone!
Well, it's not my field.
Pat Buchanan!
I'd like to believe, but it's...
Wrong! There is life after death. The soul does not ascend to heaven, but rather rests in a limbo state that varies depending on the karma of the spirit. Issue number 4. Intelligent beings on other planets, yes or no? Pat Buchanan.
I would think so, but...
Eleanor Cliff!
Don't know.
Jeff, come on!
Me either.
Morton Town!
Well, no one really knows.
Wrong! There is intelligent life in the 11th galaxy on the planet Neptar, which will conquer Earth in the year 5482, utilizing us for slave labor and the Chelonian salt mines. Issue number 5. What number am I thinking of? Pat Buchanan.
Jeez, 82.
Wrong, Eleanor Clift.
Is it between 1
don't
and 100?
Don't skirt the issue.
40.
Wrong, Morton Tyne.
212.
Wrong, Jacarino.
2.
Wrong, the correct answer is 134. Issue number 6, what did you have for breakfast today? Eleanor.
Some cantaloupe.
Morton Tyne, USA.
I had poached eggs and toast.
Jack Jamundo.
Bacon and eggs.
Patty Patty Buke Buke.
I'm thinking waffles, maybe.
Wrong.
A little...
You all had Special K with banana. Issue number 7. What is issue 14 going to be? Some say it will deal with an economic matter. Others believe it will involve Germany. More teeny tiny tabletop.
Oh, acid rain?
Wrong! Eleanor, gee, I think you're swelling on.
I have no idea.
Wrong! You know quite well. You're just shy. Mundo, Jackalope, G, Man, Mania,
Jack. It might be.
I'm not finished with your name, Jamonicle. Jack-o'-lantern, J.G., Jimmy, 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 Mayhem.
You're insane, John.
Wrong! I'm perfectly sane. Everyone else, however, is insane and trying to steal my magic bag. St. Patrick of Buchanonomics.
I think I'm going to leave, John.
Wrong! You can't leave. All the doors are locked from the outside. Next issue. What motivates me? Why do I conduct my show in this manner? Mundo!
You're a jerk.
Eleanor!
Really large ego?
Wrong! I was neglected by my parents, and I overcompensate to shadow my feeling that I have an inadequate intellect. Next issue!
So, you didn't know your parents very well?
Wrong!
Wrong?
Wrong!
Right?
Wrong! Next week, the SNL probe continues. Is my money in a savings and loan? If so, what's my account number? Bye-bye! Wrong!
You ready, Sam? Okay, hit it. Oh, yeah. Sounds good, boys. Now, let me tell you something. Now, after what y'all put us through, all the things that you thought you'd do, now, let me tell you something. Y'all, I got news for you.
We're gonna turn your red stain blue.
I hear it. Now listen to me. I will be fine when you're gone. Cause you know we were right and you was wrong. So you know I just wanna make it very clear to you.
We're gonna turn your red stain blue.
Oh my god, let me think of this. We're sick of your secrets. We're sick of your lies. And we ain't gonna hear no more excuses. No more alibis. You say we're all commies. You say we're all spies. Well, you know something? You can say anything you want, but just say goodbye. Now, you know, you'll be real sorry that you treated this bad. Because, you know, you didn't know just what you had. But brother, now you do. Because I got something to tell you. Hit it. One more time. Ah, that's what I want to hear. Sing it out loud, everybody. Stock puppet chorus, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hear it for you. Yeah. Oh, mama. Let me hear you. They can hear you in Birmingham. They can hear you in Macon and Raleigh and Columbia and Charleston. Oh, man, that's wonderful. You guys did a hell of a job. Get yourself a cup of joe. I mean, you earned it.
The Attorney General wishes to announce that the following program has been rated
liberal rubbish
by the Department of Justice.
All right, guard, begin the unnecessarily slow-moving dipping mechanism.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Isn't he simply adorable, Bob?
I told you, never trust a monkey!
Listen, you smell something.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Talking to myself at night because I can't forget.
was my original opening, The White Stripes with Seven Nation Army. And before that, we had a couple of little things. We had the song that I threw together just on a whim called Red States Blue, Gonna Turn Your Red States Blue. And Ben Birch put that up on White Rose Society. And we had the McLaughlin Group Saturday Night Live comedy bit, which I get the current opening from. Some people wanted to hear that again. And we had BuzzFlash.com, of course, doing their usual GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Hi, and welcome back to the show. I am Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe Radio Show, and I am the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And we are celebrating our 100th show. I don't know if you'd want to call it an anniversary, but next month will be our 12-month anniversary. So, our two-year anniversary, 12-month, our two-year anniversary that we are celebrating here at Fabulous Studio Al, which is in Decatur, Georgia, which is not quite the heart of downtown Freeperville, but we're not too far away from that here on the outskirts of Atlanta. You go a bit further south into places like Stockbridge and places like that, and that's where you find the real redneck community. Although, you know what, really surprising, for people who aren't familiar with the South, the worst rednecks aren't even in Georgia. They're in Florida. Florida has the dumbest rednecks in the country. I mean, never mind Alabama and Mississippi and all those places. And I discovered something, too. Let me talk about this for a second, because this is really interesting. I grew up in New York City, in Brooklyn, to be specific, as you could probably tell from my accent from time to time. And I moved down here much later, about 10 years ago. So I have a fairly unique perspective. Not a unique perspective, but I have a decent perspective of the way things are in the Northeast and in the South, and the way they treat things in the South. And what I find interesting is down here, among Southerners, they have their own pecking order. The Virginians, for example, they make fun of the North Carolinians, who make fun of the South Carolinians, who make fun of Georgia, who make fun of Alabama, who make fun of Mississippi, who make fun of Louisiana. And it ends there, because then you have Texas, and Texas is its own little world. You know, as I'm fond of saying, people say, don't mess with Texas. Let me tell you something, people. Brooklyn can kick Texas' ass. You know what I'm fucking saying? You know what I'm saying? We'll come down here and kick all your fucking asses if we can find you underneath the cow shit. So I don't mean to do that. There's some wonderful people come out of Texas. There's some greats. Molly Ivins, the wonderful Molly Ivins. Dan Rather is from Texas. A lot of people don't know that. Dan Rather is a Texan. Ann Richards, the great governor, who was the governor before Bush weaseled his way in there and ruined that state. There were some really good people in Texas. Unfortunately, very few of them are in politics. And it's not enough. It's really kind of a shame, because, you know, there are some wonderful people out there, and they get a bad rep. But for the most part, they deserve it, because they tolerate those people out there. But it's just interesting to see how the pecking order was. And Florida really doesn't come into it, because Florida has always been considered a tourist state. But Jesus, man, they got some really screwy rednecks down there. By the way, did anybody know that Florida has both the oldest and the largest city in the country, largest in terms of land space? The city of Jacksonville, which is also the county of Jacksonville, is the largest city in the country as far as land space is concerned. It's just square miles. Not larger, so certainly as far as number of people are concerned. I think New York City still has that. But St. Augustine is also the oldest city in the country in terms of European colonization. So it's an interesting state, Florida. It's an interesting state. I lived there in Orlando for many years in Castleberry. My dad, who was born in 1921, he's 84 years old now. Actually, he's 83. He'll be 84 in November. No, I'm sorry. He's 84. His birthday is in April. What am I thinking? My birthday's in November. Get a life, Joe. Wake up. At any rate, Florida is a very interesting state. It's mostly tourist stuff. I spent some time there. I went to 1 year of high school there, and thank God that's all I spent. But the only good thing that came out of that was that I met my current wife down there, and that's about all the good I can say about that. It's a pretty big good, but it's But overall, it was a pretty lousy experience down there. What was I talking about? Well, like I said, we're doing a celebration of the 100 shows today. And a note on some of the music, by the way. For the BuzzFlash stuff, you notice I always use the same intro and outro. The intro to that is from The Refreshments, and it's a song called Bandidos, which is really cool. And I got turned on to The Refreshments from watching Japanese animation music videos that people make. They made a really cool music video to that using scenes from the television series, actually from the movie Lupin the Third, The Castle of Cagliostro. Lupin was on Cartoon Network. It's still on from time to time, I think. And Castle of Cagliostro was directed by the great Hayao Miyazaki, one of the best action-adventure films ever made, and they made a real cool video to that using that song. The Refreshments are the ones, by the way, that do the theme song from King of the Hill, which is a really great theme song. And the closing theme to that is from another cartoon. It's from a cartoon. Also, it's from the Teen Titans, the new Teen Titans. It's by Puffy AmiYumi, and it's just basically the background combat music that they have. I'm a fan of comics, and I'm a fan of cartoons, and I happen to like the new Teen Titans cartoon, even though it's very, very different from what the Teen Titans comic was that I remember in any way from the 80s. The cartoon is very anime-esque, but I really do like the music. Puffy AmiYumi, like I said, in a kind of new retro-ish type of rock there. Very good stuff. I'm a big fan of music. What's going on? There was an article in the New York Times today. It's Memorial Day, by the way, and I want to take a little bit of time to thank all of those who have fought and died for this country over the years. Millions upon millions of Americans who gave their lives so that I can get up here and do this, and so that others can feel free to listen to it. And those dangers are threatened every day. And as I mentioned in one of my posts called It's All About Them, you can see that if you look on the open thread to this, if you go down and scroll down, you'll see a thing called It's All About Them, or All About Us, excuse me. You know, the real enemies of freedom aren't so much the Iraqi terrorists or the Islamic terrorists and all that. I mean, certainly there are some that want us dead, but the real enemies to freedom are the leaders that push you into war for no reason. Because, you know, most of us really would prefer not to fight at all if we could help it. And even among those, and I was talking with my wife about this, even among people who are very prejudiced, white people who don't like black people, there's very few of them who would want all the black people in the world killed. And even among those who would want all the black people in the world killed, there are very few of them who would actually go out and do it. Occasionally they do go out and do stuff like that, but they're really, really a very small minority. But that kind of tribal fear, primal tribal fear, is in everybody. And the Bush people and the fascists and the communists and all these other people, they use that fear to manipulate people. And when you're talking about going to war and stuff, it's really, you're not going to war with other nations. You're just going to war with other people who are just like yourself. You just happen to live in another country. If you ever watch MASH, you see a lot of that. There's situations where soldiers come in and they see someone who they were fighting with who's in the hospital there, and they realize that they're just human beings like they are. One guy was happy because he shot this North Korean guy who was stealing his shoes. And then he found out that the reason why he was stealing his shoes was because the guy had frostbite. And he just came to recognize that it wasn't just a mindless, faceless minion. And, you know, all the people of Iraq, all the people of North Korea and of South Korea and of Vietnam, all of these regular working people, they're just like us, man. They're just like us. They want to support themselves. They want to raise a family. And they want to make a better life for themselves. It's the leaders that push us into war. It is a class war. Whenever you're talking about stuff like this, it is a class war, because it's always the powerful and well-connected who want us to go to war with somebody else, because they're the ones that benefit from it, not us. And whether you're talking about Islamic terrorists or Christian fundamentalist terrorists who blow up buildings in Oklahoma, you know, it's all the same type of thing. It's all people using each other to manipulate you into doing something that's against your best interest. And we go for it for the most part because, you know, well, we don't know any better. And there is that sort of, like I said, that primal fear of those that are different from us. Which kind of goes into what I started to talk about. It was an article, it was an opinion column in the New York Times today called Class and the American Dream. And it talks about how the gap between the rich and the poor in this country is widening, and it has been widening for the last 30 years as the corporate slash conservative, whatever you want to call them, as they have gained power and gained control of this country. The gap between the rich and the poor has been widening. And according to the article, let me read a little bit from it. What fools many Americans is the sight of high achievers vaulting from poor to obscure backgrounds to positions of power and wealth. Witness Bill Clinton, who rose from a humble background to the presidency, or Bill Gates, who rose from the upper middle class to become the world's richest person. Witness all the self-made billionaires and corporate titans. But beneath this veneer of superachievers, recent scholarship shows many Americans find themselves mired in the same place as their parents, with profound implications for their health and education, as well as other aspects of their lives. Those in the upper middle classes enjoy better health and live longer than those in the middle classes, who live longer and better than those in the bottom. That's partly because money, good jobs, and connections help the better off get the best medical care. Education, supposedly the key to advancement in a meritocratic society, I will say it right, is also heavily dependent on wealth and class. It is thus extremely disheartening to learn that 250 of the most selective colleges, the proportion of students from upper-income families has actually grown over the past two decades, despite financial aid programs. And education is, of course, a big, important step for people who want to advance themselves. And the American dream really has been about pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. But the problem is, there are people out there who, you know, they provide the bootstraps, and they don't want the government to help anybody out. Excuse me. Let me get a drink here. Hang on. This is not water. This is Diet Mountain Dew, by the way. Thank you very much. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. How did I last 100 shows coughing up and gagging up like that? Honey, how did I do that? She's shaking her head. I don't know. What the hell? What the hell are you asking me for? I'm sitting here trying to sleep. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You know, it's really... Marx was right, but Marx was wrong. Marx was wrong to believe that you can create a truly classless society. I don't think you can, because there are always going to be people who are, you know, able to achieve more than others, and that's fine. But he was right in the sense that it really is a class struggle. It really is a class struggle. And that's what we have to be wary of, because it's always the people up on top, the people who are achievers, who see power and money as goals unto themselves, and who don't really care about what to do with the power and money, what they get it. It's just, oh, we got to have it. And they're the ones that are always kind of foisting these wars on us and stuff like that. Look what's going on in Iraq. Look who's paying the price, both, you know, in blood, but also who's taking the blame for all the things that's going on. The upper-level officers aren't taking any blame. Oh, they got that one female general, but she was the one who was trying to let people know that there were bad things going on. The ones who were really involved with the stuff, they get promoted. Albert Gonzalez, who wrote the letter saying, yeah, we don't need to follow the Geneva Convention. That's not exactly what he said, but that was the gist of it. He gets promoted to attorney general. You know, it's very difficult to feel positive in this day and age. I do know things are going to get better eventually, because this stuff simply can't continue. However, things are going to get bad for a while, and I hate to say that because people think I'm sounding negative all the time, but I'm not really negative. I just understand that a lot of this is just human nature, and until we learn to overcome that, things are going to continue as they are. And the other alternative is that, you know, we blast ourselves out of existence. Way back when, in one of my very early posts, my nemesis Bichon talked about this Vietnamese guy he knew who ate ramen noodles every day and drove a filthy bus to a crappy donut shop, but eventually he saved and scrimped and he managed to own that donut shop. And that's fine, and that's a wonderful example. But what I asked him then and what I'm asking now is, why are liberal Democrats against that? Or why do you think liberal Democrats are against that? We're not. And the truth of the matter is that the man didn't do it all by himself. There was at least a bus system there to take him to the donut shop. And there were people out there making sure that he got a minimum wage and that the banks didn't just take his money and rip him off like they did back in the 30s, which led to the creation of the FDIC and all the other insurance agencies that make sure that when your money is in a bank, it's safe and not just lost by people speculating with it, which is what happened during the Depression, or to cause the Depression. You know, and when that guy does become a success, what is he going to do? Is he going to want his children to live in a crappy house and drive a filthy bus to a bad job? Or does he want to have a better life for themselves? And that's really what it's all about. You know, the right wing always likes to make you think that liberals want you to get something for nothing. And we don't want you to get something for nothing, but we want your work to have the value it deserves. And that's really the important thing, that you get what you deserve. And the people up on top, they think what you deserve is to be basically their indentured servants or their slaves. Because in their minds, they're the only people that really exist. They're the only ones that matter. Everybody else, well, you know, you're on your own. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into that because I don't want to depress everybody too much. But it is important that we understand these things and that this is what's going on in our society today. And things are a lot worse for working people now than they were 30 years ago. Yes, some people can still work out of it. My sister, whom I love very much, she worked very hard to get to where she is. And, you know, she's doing very well and very successful, and I'm very glad for her. I've had less luck. Luck isn't the right word. Maybe I have an attitude problem. And I know that I have an attitude problem. My attitude problem basically revolves around the fact that I don't put up with the bullshit as well as other people do. I have very, very low tolerance for that bullshit. I don't know how I lasted in the military for as long as I did. But working in a regular job is a different story. Maybe if I'd had the option to just walk out of the military like you do with a regular job, I would have. But at any rate, let's take another little break, and we'll be back in a bit. Sam, play us out.
The Papa Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup O' Joe Radio Show.
Back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I encourage everybody to go out there and send me your stupid boss tricks, which we're not doing this show. We'll do next show. That's fine. I still have plenty of suggestions to choose from. And I encourage everybody to email me and let me know what you think and to write a comment on the blog. For those of you listening for the first time, because Avedon Carroll actually linked me on the main page in Atrios, listen into the show and write a comment. Let me know what you think, because I've been doing this for quite some time, and some of y'all may or may not be aware of me, who I am, what I'm doing. Looking through the archives, because what I did for this show was I sat back and I went back through the archives and I picked out what I thought were the best posts, and it turned out to be 97 of them. I should have really gone for 100, but you know something? It took me a long time to rifle through those and to set up the HTML so that you can link. And that's what I love about Blogspot, by the way, that you can link to individual posts. One of the older sites around BartCop of BartCop.com, his site doesn't have that. So if you link to him, you can't link to a specific post. You can only link to a day. They do keep archives there, which is great, because BartCop's been doing this for God knows how many years, about 3-4 years now. And longer than that, really. Longer than that, back into the 90s. And but he's trying to get a new page together, and we're hopeful that'll take off soon. He was on vacation for a while, going to Hawaii, playing some poker, sitting on the beach, living la vida loca. La vida loca? Whatever. Hang on, let me get a drink here. Ah, professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. My wife just said the same thing. Am I getting predictable, honey? Am I getting too predictable? Someone wrote and asked why I don't have the wife on the show for the 100th episode. And you know, it's fine, you know, and all that. And she's been on the show before. We've discussed religion and other things. It's kind of a touchy subject because we both have very, very different viewpoints about religion. My train of thought has always been a little bit more towards the scientific, rational explanation of things, and that doesn't always work with faith. And I appreciate that, and I respect that. You know, it's like all this talk about intelligent design and all this bullshit trying to subvert evolution. And, you know, look, if you want to teach something like intelligent design, teach it where it belongs in a philosophy class. That's really where it belongs, because you're not dealing with scientific fact. You're dealing with speculation based upon our culture, based upon a lot of different things that don't have anything to do with the scientific method. There's nothing wrong with me, and to most liberals about teaching a comparative religion course or to talk about philosophy and religion, but science class is not the place to do that. And in the long run, when people find that science contradicts what they believe, well, then that's a problem that they're going to have to deal with, because science is science. You know, what happens on this planet, how the animals live, how geology works, how physics works, all of that. None of that has anything to do with human opinion. Human opinion is not going to change that. And you can believe anything you want, but, you know, it's not going to make a rock stop falling and repeal the law of gravity. It just doesn't work that way. There's something greater. I mean, I think people who try to take the Bible or the Quran or whatever and turn it into a science book, I think they're just fooling themselves. There's a greater message there. And really, in larger point, the message of the Bible is, are we not our brother's keepers? Someone pointed that out sometime. They said in the beginning when was it Cain or Abel? Who murdered who? Cain murdered Abel, right? Cain murdered Abel. And God came to him and said, where's Abel? And Cain said, hey, am I my brother's keeper? And someone pointed out that the entirety of the Bible might be looked at as an attempt to answer that question. And liberals, more often than not, are the ones who believe that we are our brother's keepers, that we do need to set up a community and a society so that we have an infrastructure to support ourselves. The ones that, you know, go around talking about, well, you know, it's every man for himself, they're the ones who have benefited the most from that society, and they don't want to give anything back to it. They figure they did it all by themselves. And it's like, that's why I don't follow much for the libertarian stuff. That's all a bunch of bullshit. Do you build the roads you drive on? Did you build your own car? Did you build the buildings? No, it doesn't. You know that those things are built by an entire community. It does take a village, people, and it takes a community. The new century is going to be very different. 100 years from now, things are going to be very, very different. I believe American power is going to be humbled, and that we are simply going to take our place as one of many, a community of nations, as opposed to the single dominant one. Because the rest of the world is simply not going to tolerate that. Now, I know that France just recently had a setback for the European Union. The people there voted no. And quite frankly, I'm glad they voted no, because it was kind of pushed on them very quickly and they weren't really sure what they were voting for. Until they're certain about it, they have a right to say no. And you know what? Democracy is working there. President Chirac, who, by the way, is a conservative. People don't realize that. Chirac is a conservative. He is not a liberal or a socialist by any stretch of the imagination. He's a conservative. And he was the one really pushing for this. And, you know, he tried to, and unlike in this country, he tried to make his case to the people of France on how these things should work. Here, we don't take the case to the people. We simply lay out what we think. And we host these little phony town hall meetings or stuff like that to propagandize for it, or we create our own little news segments, the government does, and we rely on a media that's either too scared or too complicit to do anything about it. So in France, they did the right thing there. But eventually, the community of nations is coming, a global, what I call a Pax Liberalis, that is on its way, a free peace, a peace of freedom. It's coming, eventually. The question is, which generation will it be? And, of course, the alternative is that we've blown the crap out of each other and it won't make any difference anyway, and the Earth will continue as it has for millions of years. And you know, environmental things may take a play anyway. I was watching some documentary about the Earth's magnetic field and how it might jump, switch. North Pole becomes South Pole or whatever. Not the planet rotating itself. I also saw something where it says that the moon, the moon is basically moving further away from Earth. And that's an important thing because apparently the moon, and I didn't know this, the moon's orbit is what keeps the planet's rotation fairly stable. Earth's rotation depends a great deal about around the moon. If the moon is not there, then we'll wobble on our axis a lot more. And even the most minor shifts in that little wobble that we have, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's not like a perfect spiral where the where if you take a ball and spin it and you could like put a needle through it or something and spin it around, the needle doesn't stay straight. The needle kind of wobbles a little bit. And the moon keeps it from wobbling too much. That's what happened to Mars, because Mars doesn't have a big moon. It wobbles so much it causes huge changes in their environment. And that's what makes life very, very difficult on Mars. And if we lost the moon, which, again, like I said, we are losing it to the tune of, I think, about an inch a year. They said they put a laser up there when they went up to the moon, the Apollo mission. They put a mirror up there. And they take in laser measurements, which are very, very precise as to how far the moon is from the Earth. And it actually has been losing. So there's things that are out of our control. And you can you know, believe it away or not, but that's just reality, man. That's just reality. But at any rate, to get back to what I was originally talking about, and that's one of the things about the show, is that I do tend to ramble from time to time. I'm a rambling guy. Hey, I'm rambling. Rambling around. I'm a rambling guy. Yes, sir. There were some of the suggestions that I get from people is that I have call-ins and stuff like that. And I was going through the archives, and I came across a post where I discussed this very issue. And the same thing still holds true today. And I don't – first of all, I don't have the technical capabilities for doing call-in. That pretty much puts the trump on that anyway, because you have to have certain type of equipment to do that, which I simply cannot afford. But that's neither here nor there. The truth of the matter is that I don't really want to do the confrontational stuff. Other people do that. They do that much better than I do. And I'm not really into that. I want to talk about issues. And I just want to say things in a way that I think, anyway, people can understand it, using historical perspective. Because, you know, I call myself the voice of the working man, but the truth of the matter is I am not like your regular working man. I'm not like one of the redneck guys that Jeff Foxworthy talks about on that blue-collar show that he has. I am not like that. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't treat women like property or like objects of sex, well, except for my wife. I'm really not like that. I'm not as intellectual as the interviewers who I emulate, like a Dick Cavett or a Jack Parr. I'm not that smart. I'm not college educated. But I have enough of an understanding of issues so that I can see things from a slightly higher point of view, but also try to relate them in ways that people can understand. I think when I talk about stuff that goes on in the workplace, especially, I think a lot of people understand it's just the mindless bullshit that goes on that doesn't need to go on. The little petty politics and, all the crap that bosses push on you simply because they can. And now that we have a corporate mentality in charge of the government, we're seeing more of that now. That kind of, you know, this is what we say and that's reality and fuck you. That's basically the attitude. But I've had other people talk, you know, trying to tell me about, you know, you got to have this and, you know, I'm not, you know, you got to have people and you got to have, because the confrontation is what sells, man. You know, yelling at people is what happens, what's happening. That's why Bill O'Reilly nobody gives a shit about what Bill O'Reilly thinks. What they like is him go on and he'll bash other people. I don't want to be like that. There's no point in being like that because it's self-defeating. You know, what they're doing on TV now is eventually going to be self-defeating. The O'Reillys and the Rushes and all that stuff, they're fooling themselves. Yeah, it'll last in the short term, but in the long term, no one's going to remember them except as bad guys, because they're bringing everything down. And you can only do so much. I mean, even Jerry Springer, eventually, you know, people got tired of that. You got to keep going and you have to keep going. And then eventually you go too far and then everything falls apart. I don't want to do that. I've done 100 shows now, and that's a pretty decent mark for somebody who really doesn't know what the hell he's doing, but I try to really avoid that. It's my show, you know? It's my show. It's me. It's who I am. And I'm not going to have I'm not going to get a guy on here, quote unquote, be a conservative, because they're generally not arguing from planet Earth. Now, if you want to get on here sometimes, and I have talked to people who, you know, consider themselves, Mark Satin is a member of the radical middle, and I understand what he's talking about. And it's not all about just totally liberal policies. It's about having a little bit of balance and about understanding that there's a conservative point of view and that there's a liberal point of view, conservative and progressive, past versus future. That's how I see that. And, of course, there's the present, you know. And there are people who can discuss things intelligently about what went right in the past that we should emulate, what we should be doing in the present, and what we need to be doing in the future. Those are all important issues that need to be addressed. But you're not going to address them from people who think that, you know, they're going to throw roses at us in Iraq. Because they're not throwing roses at us, they're throwing bombs at us in Iraq. That's the reality, man. And, you know, people have to learn how to deal with that rather than just denying it. All the well-wishing in the world isn't going to make the situation any better. They didn't have a realistic plan of attack when they went in there to begin with. And they don't have a realistic plan of attack when it comes to domestic policies. All they care about is how can we get more money. And when it comes to conservative commentators or people who get online, they're not interested in really trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. They're just like, you know, nah, I win. You know, I can yell better than you can. That's really what their attitude is all about. So, you know, I really don't want to get into that. And for the next 100 shows, I'm going to continue to do what I'm doing. I know some people don't like it. Some people don't like me talking about my personal stuff. But, you know, the personal stuff is what makes it interesting to me, or at least in the terms of trying to personalize what's going on in the world rather than looking at vague, obscure philosophical discussions. Let's just talk about how it affects people on a regular basis, because that's what it's really all about. You know, the middle class in this country used to be fairly complacent. They used to be able to go to a job and do their thing and eventually own enough money to buy a house or whatever, and the American dream and all that stuff. And that stuff is going away. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can see it everywhere you go among working people. So, and I realized people wanted me to do something really, really special for the show, and I would have really liked to have gone back and listened to all the clips and played the best of, but you know what? You got to have a staff for that sort of thing. And I really don't have that. So we just did kind of a regular show here, and I hope you enjoyed the little goodies that we had. And we're going to do a little – we're going to keep the intro the same. I might do up a new one in a little while. We'll see. But I'm going to have some new Segway music and all that stuff. So at any rate, I am going to end this show 100, and I want to thank everybody for listening in. I want to thank everybody I thanked earlier again. Just go back and listen to it again if you want. And I will be back in a few days with show number 101 of the Cup of Joe radio show. And I hope to continue doing this, and I hope that you continue to listen here as I'm trying to kill these last few seconds off. Anyway, y'all take care. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show. Show 100. We'll be back in a couple of days. Talk to you then. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, oh, in a jar of John. Don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George, I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do every trick. Open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer
rock steel, a mug of Doug, a cuppa.